Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The bill that you have before you now is a proposed committee substitute for House Bill 327, and we have made some changes which reflect the work session that we had on the bill that you had attended, and Mr. Carr and Ken Humphreys, who is the research analyst from Legislative Affairs Agency. At that work session, we had requested Mr. Humphreys to provide us more information on the cost index and enclosed with your material is the analysis of the bill, two pages of it, and memorandum from Mr. Humphreys, from Mr. Latham to Mr. Humphreys to us, explaining the reasons why we use the four largest cities, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, and Ketchikan, on the cost index. Secondly, the areas, communities that would be affected, a sample of that is listed on page 2 of the memorandum. I really don't have too much more to say on the bill, except that the changes that we have made in the bill include small businesses and the definition of a small business under the definition section. Also, if you want to go page by page, page 2, the changes we have on the CS is on line 7, where the governor appoints the members of this corporation and the legislature confirms the members in joint session. On page 3, we have extended the purpose of the corporation to provide low-cost energy, not only to residences, but to small businesses and public facilities. That would include cottage industries, retail, small retail conducted in homes, like little grocery stores, and public facilities, which include the schools. Under definition of small business, we stated that a small business with annual gross income of less than 100,000, which is contained in page 8. Changes throughout include small business, where we had failed to include them in the original bill. And that is contained in page 5 under line 7. Again, you see small business and public facilities, and to the extent economically feasible to public utilities. Aside from that, there were no other changes. But I'd like you to take a look at the brief explanation of the bill, which would give you an idea what, in brief, what the bill now is all about. There were some questions last time that maybe we should not get involved with this because private industry should rightfully conduct this kind of business. This bill doesn't prevent the energy corporation to conduct business or contract with private industry. As a matter of fact, that would be a must, because I don't really believe that this corporation would become involved in private enterprise to the extent that they would capitalize the various businesses involved, and only when it is impossible to arrange with the private industries that this corporation would have the duty to deliver energy directly to the people. We had discussed this, and I think Mr. Farr mentioned that there's a refinery being built in his district or around the interior, and perhaps this corporation would contract with that refinery to do the to process the royalty gas and oil of the state that would be delivered to the consumers. Aside from that, I really don't have any further comments unless you have questions to ask me, and I'd be glad to answer them.
The memorandum from Mr. Humphrey's on the second page, section 41, 45, 110, relating to access to state royalty oil and gas. He says, I do a 50% discount. About the fourth line, he says, this could either be used to provide oil or gas directly to communities which qualify, or as a mechanism to finance delivery arrangements through other channels. Does that mean that they can take advantage of the 15% discount as a means of raising funds to, they're sort of like a broker, so they can raise funds to finance delivery, different types of delivery systems and delivery arrangements? They can buy royalty on gas for 15% discount. Does not mean they necessarily have to use it. They can resell it, take up the 15% margin, and they use that money to do something else.
Well, that's not how I look at it, Mr. Hayes. The way I look at it is that this corporation would be able to purchase royalty gas and oil at 50% less than the fair market value, and then they could use that to capitalize the corporation so that they could deliver the gas either directly, or then they could make arrangements, they could contract it out and say this is, this costs less than 15% of the market value. You could go and sell it to the people and pass on the savings to the consumer. And that's how I understand that section of the bill. And that was my intent, anyway, to do that so that they could pass on the savings. But to further answer your question, the reason why this bill doesn't provide a high capitalization of doing business is that I was hoping that it would not become another bureaucracy, that it would be more or less, and I use the word Mr. Parr says, a paper corporation in a way so that it's not in a massive production type of office, where you find 17, 18, 20 people right away, and I was hoping that it would be a very minimum of bureaucratic activity.
I think this ties on to Ava's asking on page 5 or in line 9 through 16, I think that would be. I don't know if we changed the word, that word to retain or not, that's all I can. Activity. Mm-hmm. But it does say here that the under contractual agreement or subsidy arrangement with a person or business capable of meeting energy needs in the municipality. And I would hope that while you have a company which is, let's say, already delivering fuel oil, as I mentioned in my part of the country, by barge down the river or something, they keep on doing it. They'd simply be able to get it 15% cheaper and should be able to sell it to the consumer 15% cheaper. What I don't know if they can get down to that 120 index every time.
Mr. Chairman, may I have the floor? On page 2 of the bill, of the memorandum on the energy cost index, the one on listing the different communities. I think the reason why, even after we had talked to Mr. Humphrey, that he thought his advice was we should keep the 100 as the index number, is that on the list here, which is available, it lists Anchorage as 50. The index in Anchorage is 50, Bristol Bay 123, and it goes on. I think we had a question on Fairbanks, and definitely it is higher than Anchorage, 127. Then you go on to various communities, North Slope 205, then Kenai 50, same as Anchorage, because we do have the natural gas. And so it averages out that 120 may not be really excessive to say that it's 120, if it exceeds 120, and there are quite a few communities that fall under that or slightly over it. And using this as a basis, this is why the index remained to be 100. But I think that it's flexible as far as I'm concerned, because it does say that each year they would have to determine the index each year on or before, this is on page 5, line 24, 25, that they would have to determine the index. And about then, we should know if it's going up or down. And if it goes up, then it automatically follows that we would have to increase the ceiling. But if it goes down, still it remains at 120.
I might point out that they're about the only city, a village, or college I see, that I recognize here, the kind I was really talking about is Manana, which is shown as 127. And Manana is connected by road to Fairbanks, you know, it's a bit far. And, but there are an awful lot of places, that, well, for example, Fort Yukon is on this list. There's no interior place in this list for Malcolm. But, I mean, they're you know, they and yet those places up and down the Yukon, Custom Rivers, the ones that do have high cost. And so I'm sure that if they were added to this list, that nearly every one of them was on over 120. Yeah, I guess so. But the Panama isn't, for example. Maybe someone in the bill when, on the line on the bottom of section says page 5 lines 17 to 19 and 20. Now the price charged may not result in a base index cost to the consumer in itself 120. I guess the only thing that kind of bothers me, I'm wondering if, say, this index is from Latham showed an index of 205 for the North Slope. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you mean by mm-hmm. North Slope, but it means barrel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with a 15% discount, if they couldn't bring it down to 120, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
With a 15% discount, does that mean that they couldn't sell it to those people the way it's worded here? Or is it intended that they would, that they might be able to make enough, use the word profit, or something of the sort, in other places? In other words, some communities might only get a 5% break or a 10% mm-hmm. break, and then they would fill up a surplus that they could use to help bring down the North Slope. Or
mm-hmm.
What I'm afraid of is that the way it reads, I wouldn't want to read to be interpreted. This reading that they couldn't service the North Slope, you see, unless they could mm-hmm. bring it down to 120, and it might be, just not be possible to do it.
Mm-hmm. Because they're
obviously the ones that have the highest index are the ones need the most.
They'd be getting about a 50% raise almost, right?
Well, fuel fire down 120, but yeah. I wouldn't want to say, well, if our 15% or whatever we can give, we won't bring it down 120. We can't do it because the law says we can't cost them more than 120. And it may just be a matter of wording here. I don't know.
Yeah, I see what you mean, except that I would hope that the word may is permissive, and if they go beyond that cost index, that it would be permissible, but I would be willing to insert another sentence here to clarify.
Well, see, it says may not, which isn't permissive. Yeah. This is the trouble.
Yeah.
See, this is what I'm saying. That prohibits you. Mm-hmm. If I want to create it, I'm afraid it would prohibit you. I can't do it.
I think, Chad, mainly because we were talking about the muckluck makers in Arctic Village and the mask makers in Anatovic Pass and the people who are drying their own salmon out and canning them in Bethel area, and they are not, you know, businessmen as we would in many other parts of the country. Many of them don't even grow $60,000. So that we were looking into what is really applicable to what we would conceive as small business in rural areas. In fact, 100,000 gross is actually big business in rural areas, if you look at it that way. But we certainly felt that the normal definition of small business I think has an annual gross income of at least $1 million.
Yeah.
But we figure that anyone who has $1 million or even has any opportunity to make that kind of money in the bush is very, very slim. And aside from maybe some of the like Penny's probably has an outlet there or other businesses throughout, but generally we were thinking of the family businesses, the cottage industry.
In other words, they're not dependent on it.
Well, they do, but it's not a big business as far as, you know, you and I know what a big business is.
Yeah, well, if you're thinking of people that depend upon this small business for their entire livelihood,
mm-hmm. I don't have average income level of people in the bush, but in comparison to an Anchorage family, I think they are in a poverty level anyway. And to make $100,000...
Well, wait a minute. You're not making it. You're gross.
I know. To gross that much and bring in, say, $15,000 to $20,000. It's a big income in the bush. Maybe some people might contradict me, but I know that some families don't make more than $10,000 a year there, and even if they work day and night and tried fishing and cottage industry and all kinds of other ventures, they still don't make that much money.
You know, which I haven't answered my problem with that 15-20 maximum.
Yeah.
I understand what we're trying to do. I just don't want
to. Yeah. I'd be willing to.
I'm trying to think of some words myself.
Okay.
I guess I'm
You'll be the author of that sentence.
No, it's just.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Tom, how do you feel about something that says in effect that they will try to get an index of not more than 120 or something like that? I don't know. It's your bill.
It's possible.
Well, or something that's going around driving, so we don't prohibit it from going above that. You know, even if you do, if it's 200 in North Slope, in a barrel, not North Barrel, but North Slope, and you cut it to 150, you've done some good. You know, it's not the ideal. It's better staying at 200.
I like the idea of when you said that maybe they could double their, you know, and rearrange it so that it's...
Fine, okay, but we don't have to pay like that, because if they can do
but
that.
But you could have, you could do the tendency to that extent, so that, I mean, that they would have to approve it in some areas where it's not a positive delivery tool. Otherwise, they would have to make an exception.
Well, I don't know if you need to make an exception if you're going to do it that way. There's nothing in the bill that says now that they got now each transaction has to be in all of its own.
So they want to sort of get
maybe Ken Humphrey, who has been working on this thing, just at one point, I talked with Thelma aside here, what she likes best of all in that deal is they would be able to, say, in a sense, make enough profit on some of these operations that they could then, you know, use that to bring this index down to 120 in a case or something like that, or 205 or whatever. I don't think that's prohibited by the bill present. I think the bill present allows it, but it might be looked at by Grand Dean or somebody to make sure. That, in other words, to make sure that they aren't forced to operate on a, that each transaction is individual, and each transaction must bring it down to 120.
Right.
Because I think it's probably okay in the bill to stand.
We'll do is double check that thing.
I'm Bob Stickles from the Division of Motor Vehicles and representing the Department of Public Safety this morning. I think it's obvious since the governor put the bill in, the department is in favor of the bill. And there's a number of reasons. Number one, it's pretty hard to be equitable in fulfilling the intent of this bill. Some individuals who are late registering their vehicles have pretty valid excuses. But as the current law exists, it doesn't give us an opportunity to take those excuses, whether they're valid or not valid.
I apologize for being late.
And we found that the clerk at the counter that has to deal with these people is sometimes put in quite a dilemma because excuses are valid. There are a few instances when it's the department's fault that the guy can't register because we've lost paperwork or whatever. But still, the way the law reads, he's going to be stuck with a $25 fine. far as the fiscal impact, just doesn't happen often enough to put a big dent in the state's economy. And we would prefer to just have this section of the law removed entirely.
You're talking about this bill, sir?
Yes, 75.
How do we get from here to here? That's what I was, yeah, you're referring to this proposed committee substitute income.
As far as the proposed committee substitutes you have in front of you, I would ask you to forget it.
Who is this?
That is the Department of Public Safety's also. At this late date, there's a number of items in here that we feel might be controversial and would hurt the chance of 75 passing.
Oh, but it's the complimentary Roberts?
Well, from the whole department, yes, from Dennis Robertson who's prepared it.
So all you're really talking about right now is just...
Right, all I'm talking about right now is this one page, 75.
Change the picture quite a bit.
Oh, okay.
I do have a couple of things I'd like to pass out.
So you're essentially saying it's too late in the season to try to...
Push that big package. I've got six items here that are, we don't consider controversial, and I would like to get the opinion of the committee, and if you feel also they are not controversial, we would like those tacked onto this bill in the form of an omnibus bill.
Are there six of the many that are in here?
No, unfortunately, they were not in there. That's another reason that was deleted.
I was commenting to the staff here just now that I would have been here 5 minutes earlier if this place had real rather than imaginary coffee.
That's the reason I didn't get here. Rob, I couldn't think of why, but that's the reason.
My office getting myself a cup of real coffee. I never had to leave the safety's choice there.
First one I would like you to consider is a section dealing with grounds that we refuse title. The current statement in the law reads the same as what you have in front of you, except it says shall, and we're asking that you replace the word shall with may. Again, there are a few reasons where we feel there's a number of reasons listed in the law of why we shall refuse registration. A few of those create problems.
I just want to ask you a way in which these are drafted. They aren't drafted in our usual style so that we can see what is the old new law. Is this all new language or
one or two words, sir. And what I thought I'd do is...
You'll tell us what those are as you go along.
Yes, sir. Okay. For example, in the first one, 28-10-100, the only change is the word shall is current law. We're requesting to make it the word may. You give us permission to do it, but not force us to do it. Again, some people have reasonable excuses.
What were the following grounds?
They're in the statute.
It's unusual for the department to come in and want to change shell to make. This is where else happens.
Like, the grounds are that the application contains a false fraudulent statement. Applicants fail to finish required information. The department has reasonable grounds to believe the vehicle is stolen or embezzled, or that the grain registration constitutes fraud against the right of flow that's another pretending legal vehicle. That the registration vehicle can be suspended or revoked for three reasons provided by law, or that the license registration tax exempt is paid. On the grounds.
Real quick question, why do you want prescription on the car?
Because as it stands now, if the department has reasonable ground to believe something, well, we're having a hard time in some cases determining what reasonable ground is. We think the vehicle might not be proper, but there's no way we've been able to check and tell for sure. It's just somebody's got an idea, and now you've got a clerk at one of the counters saying, well, sorry, sir, but I can't register your vehicle because I think it's not proper.
You're required, then, to refuse registration where you just have the reasonable ground, and it might
might actually be quite unfair and have no choice
right.
because of the current wording of the statute.
Right. This will still let us do it, but if we're not sure, it'll also let us give the guy a registration. We found a couple of these we've been proven wrong on.
The clerk at the counter is going to make that discretionary decision, is that right?
In some cases, most of the time she will be instructed to take it to her supervisor, period. But right now there is no options. She just flat has to say no. The second page deals with the same thing, only it's titles. Change the word shall to may.
Again, there you're stuck. You have to do it, even though it might be unfair in some sense.
Right.
We have the same ground.
Same ground.
Okay.
Third page you have in front of you, 28-20-050, pertains to financial responsibility and the Financial Safety Motor Vehicle Safety Responsibility Act. Currently, we are required to pursue and suspend an individual who is uninsured involved in motor vehicle accident if the damage is $200 or more. We're asking you to raise the damage to $500.
That's the only change.
That is the only change.
You're currently allowed one freebie, right? You can drive without insurance. You have one accident, and you've got to show proof of financial responsibility.
Yes, sir.
Or have a policy. The first accident we're talking about is a $200 limit. You want to change to $500? Is that what it is?
Yes, sir. The second one also deals with financial responsibility.
Just a question back on this. Go from 200 to 500. I don't see what a good reason that would be. It seems to me we'd want to go from 200 to 100. You're talking about mandatory insurance.
Well, there was a bill a couple of years ago which never moved anywhere, which was too close to far. Everybody had to insurance. But what they reason. The objection that always comes up is that you can't force it. They'll come in, they'll buy their policy, and then get their thing okayed, and they call and go back to the insurance company and cancel the next day. That's what really happened. If there really was a building, it'd make everybody have it.
Is my building insurance?
Yeah, right. Yeah, you don't have to insure your own car. That's your problem. Liability that we're talking about.
There's the other objection to that is that the insurance companies become massive. The prior taxing organizations require everyone to pay to the company and pay absolutely nobody anything.
Well, that was the thing. What they do is keep whatever they keep, and you go back and cancel your policy, we get to get it, right?
What's the penalty for, if you have a man that's on a second offense, right now they have a maximum $200 penalty. They're required to have insurance. What's the penalty if they don't? Do you remember?
Well, their license is suspended, and it remains suspended for 3 years or until such time as they do provide proof of financial responsibility in the form of insurance.
Well, they have an alternative, that they could call security with this party
right.
rather than getting insurance.
Right. Provide a settlement, get a court judgment in their favor. There's a number of things. Most of the cases, probably 90%, end up either being suspended because they can't do the other things, or they get insurance.
You have a controversial item. Why don't we skip to the next one?
The next one is, again, financial responsibility, and it raises the injuries to a minor from 200 to 500. The past 3 years, there's been a Legislative Affairs Committee working with the department on this, and they have also recommended the increase. I believe some of the members here were on. I think Mr. Brown was on.
I'm afraid I made none of the meetings. We did a bad summer. Brandon funded me and himself to fill one position jointly, and the adult budget was going to pay their assistance.
will this limit jump go from 200 to 500 on the same?
Right, that's the only change.
The previous one did, right?
Yes, sir.
That inflation is set in enough to where 200 is not realistic.
That's right.
To tore up one fender, you got $200.
Well, if you scratch the paint, you've got more than $200.
Yeah.
And that was not true in 1959.
No, sir. This just covers inflation. Besides the inflation, the other reason we're asking for this is the amount of cases that we have to deal with. By law, we're supposed to deal with them within 30 days after the accident occurs. That's not happening. In some cases, it's 11 months behind. And it's based on volume compared with the number of people we've got to do the work. So we're trying to hit the more important ones first, or the more financially damaging to an individual first. And there are very few that fall under the $500 limit.
And your volume is increasing partially, sir, you know, because more and more people are driving without insurance.
That's correct. And there's more and more people in
jail. Well, I realize that's a factor. But the second factor is, I think, a large percentage of cost of driving without insurance has gotten so expensive.
That is probably well true. For example, in 71, there were something like 13,000 accidents last year. When 76 is finally tabulated, there'll be something like 29,000 accidents. Yeah, so there's been a huge increase there, and as well as inflation.
This is also probably that leads to temporary population increase in the greater Fairbanks area, to the matter of 55% at that time. I hope some of the people will hold it up. They don't drive very well in the snow, you know that? Come up from Oklahoma and Texas.
28-35-080 has a couple of changes. Currently, the individual's got to report an accident. If it's $100 or more, we're asking that you increase that to $500.
Amen.
Oh, yeah.
And we're also asking in here, we're putting in a statement that if a report is submitted by a peace officer, an individual is not required to report.
Where is that
section A.
500, 100 to 500.
Yes, and the last sentence in there.
And that last sentence, therefore, is new then, right?
Yes, sir.
So in our style, it would be otherwise. Right?
And that is tied in with the financial responsibility also.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask one question on this? I would have, in other words, supposing I have a vehicle accident, and a peace officer is there and investigates the accident. I have no way of knowing whether he reports it or not. Is he willing to pick the hand reported out of there? I have no idea that he will report it, but I don't want to ever get trapped in that presumption.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Right. Yes, sir.
How am I going to know that he did?
You're going to assume, as a citizen, you're going to assume he didn't.
Well, if I assume
that he did do it.
Yeah,
in other words, it's going to be...
Didn't.
No, sir. You know, I could ask you, I could write to you and say, you know, you had an accident on such and such a date, please give me some details, and you come back and say, well, a trooper or the Anchorage State Police filed, then I'll go to find out why they didn't turn it in.
Well, can we lead in this one?
Yes, sir.
That's all I'm asking. We lead in and report it there.
Why all the arrests? Are there more changes in BCD?
Yeah, it's wording change from the current law, but it's the same substance, sir. Last one, I hope is not controversial, but I have a feeling it may be. There is only one word added to this, court or department of competent jurisdiction. As the current statute reads, it is only court of competent jurisdiction.
The
problem we're having is the department suspends or revokes an individual's license for many reasons that are in the law. Implied consent, refuse to take the breathalyzer, points, not having security after an accident, not taking recommendations from a driver improvement specialist. There are a number of reasons, and currently, under present law, there are a $10 fine if you're caught without driving without a license. Had the court done these actions, you'd be put in jail for 10 days, and the fines have been averaging about $400. And the department feels that the suspensions we do are required by law. They should have the same status as a court suspension as far as what happens if you disobey the suspension.
Now, is that the only thing that's new in this case?
Yes, sir. The only thing added is the word department.
I'd suggest the committee look for the statute in the package. I mean, it's
'As far as the department is concerned, if any of you committee members feel one of these, as this one, is controversial, as Representative Brown has, we recommend you just pull it out and forget it for this year. The ones that are really important to us are those dealing with financial responsibility. There are so many accidents happening and so much money damage, we're in a crunch to try and be equitable to the public. And raising the limits will be a considerable help.
Can you go back to that last big law in Toledo? Changing physically to medical, medically incapable of making a regular report during the period of incapacity, instead of physically, unintended, that cover. somebody who just, you know, carried the injury?
It was intended to cover those with injuries.
And to eliminate, let's say, a drunk driver would be exempt under this.
No, sir.
Just specifying medical disability as opposed to.
Section A, the changes are 100 to 500 in the last sentence. Change B in the current law is incorporated into change A. Because it was getting to mention it's $100.
Oh, I see. So sections A and B are now the new A.
The new A. Section B, in what I've given you, is now section C in the old book, stating that the forms will be department forms if you're required to give one.
C has been omitted in the new. Subsection C of the current law is not in there. That's what's confusing. I mean, B corresponds to B and so forth. Where's the thing that corresponds to the old subsection C, the form of accident report and so forth?
It's not there.
Oh, it's not there? Okay. Well, it's not a biggie anyway.
No, sir. We plan, if this passes, most of the people, there won't be that many forms required. Most accidents are investigated by a police officer.
Okay. Okay.
The current section C that I've handed you corresponds to F in the old law.
Under the new C, when the driver of the vehicle is incapacitated, the owner has 10 days, assuming he's not the owner, the owner has 10 days from learning of the accident to file a report.
If it's not police investigated, yes, sir. After he's learned of the accident. Sections D and E are not contained in the old law under that particular statute, but are contained in there, saying that the accident reports cannot be used as evidence in a civil suit in court.
That is located somewhere
in the statute.
That's the other section where it is located in slightly more detail than your current D. That's just a vague memory on it. I'm trying to get caught up there.
The current section says no report made in accordance with this chapter may be used in evidence in a criminal or civil action arising out of the accident that is the subject of the report.
I would much refer to that.
What section is that?
That is 35-120.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if we pass this amendment, I strongly urge that we omit D and leave that current section in there. Without prejudice. Too vague without prejudice with regard to the question.
Well, he goes on saying
citation to the official law on that subject?
Yes, sir, it's 35-120.
Could you read it, please?
No report made in accordance with this chapter may be used in evidence in the criminal or civil action arising out of the accident that is subject to the report. That is in its entirety. Section 35-130 deals with false report or destruction of evidence, which is where in Section E of what you've got in front of you, we say unless necessary for to prosecute for false reporting.
Why the rewriting? Just because it's cleaner and easier to read, or what's the purpose for it? Because it says virtually the same thing now.
Yes, sir. That, I think I'd like to ask one of the draftsmen who rewrote it. John?
Mr. Stickles, I'm sorry, I don't believe I did rewrite that section.
Yeah, well, it is slightly rewritten, and at least rearranged. I was just wondering why. Is it, apparently, D in the first sentence of E is the current law that he just read to us, and if it gets grammatically different, it seems otherwise to be the same, and I was just wondering why the changes seem to be necessary.
Did Dennis talk to you about why he changed it?
In our meeting yesterday, I don't believe this was brought up at all, so far as the amendments you were going to present this morning.
Why don't we just delete D in the first section of E? Now, what about the rest of E? Is that also a current law somewhere?
Yes, sir. That's also the same thing in 35-130.
I'm sorry, since we don't have that section, could you read that, the part that corresponds to that second section of the existing law?
An officer or person who knowingly makes or subscribes a false report concerning an investigation of a vehicle or damage or injury caused by a vehicle as provided in this chapter is guilty of perjury. A person who destroys, obliterates, conceals, removes, or who aids, abets, or assists in the destruction, concealment, or removal from a vehicle of evidence showing or tending to show that the vehicle collided with a person or property is punishable by fine of not more than $500 or by imprisonment for not more than 6 months. It's not in this section.
Where's the section about the department shall furnish upon the demand of party and so forth a certificate showing the accident reported as a hazard or not to the main?
I think that's currently, I would assume that is currently cleanup for the simple reason that we do provide the courts right now with it, but nowhere in the statutes are we.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that E ought to be the second sentence of E and delete the first sentence, even if someone may believe the current law is clumsy or ungrammatical, displayed in the session. We had a daily meeting, judiciary committee, and all of that. We just have a lot of fun and everything beautiful and all make. Now, I have a question mark here. What is the question mark?
If it is simpler, and it will be simpler to for you to believe that this will pass, the department would not be opposed to you deleting sections B, C, D, and E, because A is the only one that has a substantive change that we need. I don't believe it's scheduled to, sir.
I think I disagree with it. I think the last sentence of E is new law, which changes practice in most cases and is needed. That is, the department shall furnish upon the demand of a party to a civil or criminal proceeding and so forth a certificate showing that a specific act of work hazard not been made to the department and report and made a date, time and date and so forth. What that does, that allows somebody, normally city chief cannot be providing
and they can't be used in evidence. They can certainly be provided as a matter of information, often are informally, and sometimes they get on the, you know, the officers in trouble because they're between the devil and the blue sea. And quite frankly, one of the things that the insurance investigators and private detectives and others get paid for is to obtain a report from the department, which the department is not entirely certain whether they're supposed to be releasing them or not.
That's right.
And this way, the department is required to tell people, yes, there is a report, and then if there's a either procedure established by the department by regulations as to how one can, in a normal way, obtain it, or if someone wishes to obtain it by court order, they can. And that is a change in the law.
Yes, sir.
The rest of it I agree with, and it is not. So I think I know what the motion is that I'm going to make regarding these amendments.
Why would there ever be any questions whether the department's supposed to release that or not? Public information. I filed a report. I was in an accident. You're going to prosecute me criminally. You can't do it because that's forced self-incrimination. That's the Fifth Amendment, right? But in any other case, you couldn't introduce any evidence in case against me, right? If you couldn't force me to testify against myself. That exclusion I understand. But why would there ever be any doubt that department had to furnish this information otherwise? It's public information.
Well, I suppose I've made that argument, Charlie, and arguing with people trying to get police reports in cases I've been involved in the last 7 years, and some of them agree with me, some of them don't. I don't mean police reports, I mean accidents.
I don't get to understand why there'd be any question about it. The only thing protected would be the Fifth Amendment. Otherwise, there's no reason. It's not public information. That will be able to anybody who wants to walk in and look at it. I mean, if there's something I'm missing here. Now, I don't mind putting it in the law.
This does not say that they can withhold it. This says that they must say it's there.
But the reason for this being put in is because they're not sure they're supposed to release it or not, which y'all use from this college.
They have an uneven practice. I have had over the years. Is that a fair statement?
No, that is a fair statement. I am relatively new down there. I'm running the section that's got accident reports as one of the things. And I sometimes get confused whether or not I'm supposed to release them or not, to be quite honest.
I can understand why there's everything confusing. It's public information. It's releasable. Right. That was the reason for my question. I didn't understand why there was any confusion and any doubt.
At least in this specific chapter, there's no indication to tell the department one way or the other.
Some of these contain Social Security numbers. Is that releasable? I don't know.
Sometimes they put down information about, you know, the color of their dog or the name of their life.
Or tell you how drunk the other guy was and so forth and so on. When the Trooper report doesn't indicate that.
The section proposed here, the sentence doesn't say they can withhold it. Simply says they must say there is a report that someone asked if it exists. Then if under other law, suppose let's say Mr. Carr's Freedom of Information Act or regulations promulgated by the department, or of course the usual procedure of getting something through a court order as a matter of right, someone would be able to obtain the report once they knew that it did exist. The department under this sentence would be required to tell someone that it did exist and was there.
Mr. Chairman, I have a distinct feeling that although I'm very much in favor of the most amendments here, I have a distinct feeling that without any further deferral, these are really in the arena of the judiciary maybe rather than the Congress. Therefore, I would like to move to Senate Bill 75 amended to
I think there are several, the motion is entirely in order, but I think there are several amendments that could easily be included without, I feel rather hesitant to pass it out with some of this language in there. without a judiciary referral, but I think there are some things that aren't that controversial.
How about the second, third one? They don't have enough page on which to set up this way, turn the pages, but this second, I put a question mark, but, no, yeah, first, second, and fourth, I'm sorry. I put a question mark with a third one as to whether the thought that was controversial or not.
That has been coordinated with the director of insurance also. He supports that.
What's the difference between the third and the fourth, Brett, on the screen? Your reasoning there that seems more controversial. Those just a $500 limit, right, in both number three and four.
Well, maybe it's the time of the explanation. I was just, I understood it the second time and not the first time. Maybe. I guess the third one is not controversial. I don't think it is. I think the first four. I think we can say the first four.
That's inflation maybe on the two of those. That's commerce.
Why don't we take the motion on the first four amendments and take a look at what it is?
I move the first four amendments being included in the Commerce Committee.
Any objections to inclusion of the first four proposed amendments? There are no objections to being included in the committee substitute. Why don't we do 080 section by section and see if there's any objections to it?
I think that on the section A, Mr. Chairman, if I might, that the only question was that we wanted to do that, you know, by omitting the word and report.
Any objection to including section A as proposed with the deletion of the word and reported? There's no objection to include that in the CS.
Mr. Chairman, I think we ought to stop there because so much of the rest of this is rewritten current law, except for that last sentence. And maybe the last sentence does Mr. Parr's question, who's all in that direction, gets into an area that we probably ought to look at. Where are we going to look at all of the information?
Anybody who feels strongly that you haven't included any of B, C, D, or E?
I think we're really out of our class
there. I think we are sort of getting into an area where it probably ought to get a judicial judiciary referral if we do include any of it. So rather than bog it down with one more referral, I think forget about the remainder of that amendment. And I think 300, in my opinion, if we did include it, we'd probably want to include a recommendation of the judiciary for review, and that would only plus in the Senate.
In order to include that last one, someone would have to then look at every circumstance in the statutes under which the department has the authority without a court to suspend the license and look to see the extent to which that the laws are properly and well drafted right now, and I know of one case where at least I and one judge are convinced it's unconstitutional. So, Mr. Chairman, one point somewhat facetious is with this last amendment that we adopted, there should be a critical note because you're going to have to reprint a whole bunch of forms.
Department can cover it.
They're not quite as bad as the Department of Labor was a couple of years ago. I remember that the guys from Finance Committee came in shell-shocked on St. Patrick's Day about 11:30
a week.
Well, multiples of 100, multiples of 100. $28,500 miscellaneous $4 million. So every department has a little bit of leeway.
Chairman, we're going to be getting that big, long, thick one next year.
Well, I hope we're not going to get it.
It's Senate Bill 321. It's 137 pages, and it's in right now.
Let's start things off right by changing driving from being a privilege to being a right. Let the state show compelling evidence why the right should be refused. So you know the philosophy now, hell, where driving is a privilege.
Meantime, I will move our uncontroversial idea.
Is there any objection passing out Senate Bill 75? Yes. Okay, we'll get a draft and bring it back to the third reading. Basically, her bill also includes 469. Which is, 469 is going to be in the financing and the Public Utility Commission. 478 expands that concept to cover also the Transportation Commission and the Pipeline Commission.
Did you have a copy of this fiscal note?
No.
Not in the package, anyway, at least one I read.
It looks like I have.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman, I have three sets of fiscal notes here. I'm not sure if it's for each commission, because they seem to be pretty high, all of them.
It is for each commission. For it's representative local. Mm-hmm. The fiscal notes were done independently by each commission.
May I ask, Carolyn, if when they did that, if they do them for all commissions or just for the particular commission?
Ours was only for the APUC, and I hand carried the pipelines down, and mm-hmm. theirs was only for the pipeline commission, so I assume transportation was the same.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, you have it. Okay. Mr. Chairman, the reason why I introduced this bill was to provide consumer representation in the proceedings of the three commissions, and especially in their rate increases. And the reason for that is I have found that many times the ordinary citizen is not able to provide an input in the decision-making process in rate increases of utilities. And that's really basically it. There's nothing very dramatic about this bill. It's a very simple consumer protection bill.
Any
Yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Didn't we just pass through a bill from this committee a couple weeks ago on established a council to take care of the consumers?
This is the alternative approach that was included in that series of drafts of utility legislation that Bill Berry hearing. One approach calls for the financing of intervening commission the various commissions to represent the public interest. Some interests wouldn't be represented without the intervener. The other approach is to have the ratepayers represented by a full-time professional counsel who's a party to every case.
Open-ended
subject to whatever limitations legislature puts on it in terms of appropriation. Federal Trade Commission operates a program like this. I assume it's subject to whatever money they're appropriating.
Also, I'd like to point out, it's subject to, in each of the case of each commission, it's subject to the discretion of the commission.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, may I comment on that? I had thought that the commission, using their discretionary power that is allowed them in this bill, would select those organizations that they see fit, not just anyone who bands together and say, well, we would like to be able to speak on this issue and provide us the legal services. It would be an organization that is recognized, that is a consumer-oriented organization that has some credibility. It just wouldn't be anyone like, say, in my neighborhood, we all decided to go and we say, okay, give us a lawyer to speak for us. So in a case like this, then it would be restrictive in some form, because the commission then would have to decide whether they want to provide this service to the requesting organization.
Mr. Chairman, wouldn't you have some problems with that, though? I mean, what basis is the commission going to have for selecting Hackenberg or some other existing organization rather than simply this group of citizens who form an ad hoc, you know, organization of their own in this particular neighborhood? I mean, they have just as much right to state subsidy for doing this as would some organization which has been in effect. They're consumers, they pay their increased costs like everybody else.
Can I interpose a suggested answer?
Right.
My suggested answer is that A, it's up to the commissioner's discretion, and B, there are standards, not open-ended, there are standards set forth in the bill. And so those particular standards that I'd like to put your time on, I'm going to be asking some questions.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Chairman, I might interpose an answer to that then. At the commission's discretion, on that kind of matter, the commission is very difficult for the commission to use any discretion, because the commission has no way in which it can legitimately select one group of consumers of the same amount of electricity from one same utility over another. I don't know how they could do that. I think we'd have to fund pretty well all of them equally.
Thank you. I would ask Carolyn if there's any more questions.
No other questions.
Mr. Chairman, we had a difficult time with the fiscal note, because we did believe that this legislation is rather open-ended. In the backup information that you have, you will see where, from the standpoint of my agency, we believe that this bill would require 3 additional people, an attorney at the same range of the existing staff attorney, utility financial analyst, and a secretary. And we go into what we believe, you know, off the top of our heads, these people would be doing. In addition, we had a difficult time trying to figure out how much money would be needed for a third party to effectively participate. And on that basis, we used the 1976 actual hearing days, which appear in our annual report. We funded a third-party attorney at $80 an hour.
I never charged that.
Attorneys presently appearing before us, I think the minimum I've seen in a rate case is $65 an hour and up to $100 an hour. Then, on the basis of consulting fees, it was $350 a day, and we used half of the actual hearing days. We also put in $5,000 for travel.
Half the hearing days?
Yes, assuming that your consultant would not be there for the entire hearing time. But this, so I would say that you're talking on this fiscal note is a maximum. But we get down to how do you decide which proceedings you allow a third party. So we went on the basis of the hearings that we had in 76.
In the fiscal note that I have, it shows contractual $369,000,
mm-hmm.
and I guess I'm missing $100,000 somewhere. I assume with this last paragraph on the backup information, which is the first sheet that I have, it comes up to $266,000. Somewhere I've missed the other $100,000 or so that's under contractual.
Well, there's the $266,000 is for the consultant fee, then the annualized attorney's fee at $97,920.
That's in addition to the attorney for and utility financial analyst and secretary shown.
That's right.
On the personal services?
Yes. You see, the commission will have to gear up to draft the regulations and to implement the process. And we anticipate this will take 3 people, an attorney, a utility financial analyst, 3, and the secretary in the support situation.
The right regulations?
No, we go into to draft the regulations, implementing the provisions, to analyze the applications that come before, come to the commission from individuals who contend that, according to the legislation, they would not be otherwise adequately represented in a proceeding, or they are unable effectively to participate in a proceeding because they can't afford to pay the costs. Then we anticipate, again, having had no experience in this kind of thing, we attempted to think through, and in, on the basis of our experience, we believe that there could possibly be proceedings before the commission if the staff people decided, no, this group is not eligible. Well, in our, this is patterned after our informal complaint procedure. If an individual is not satisfied with the way the staff has handled an informal complaint procedure, then they have an appeal process to the commission. And in an appeal process to the commission, these people would have to justify their decision, so they would be a part of the proceeding. Plus, we anticipate that this could result in litigation from groups who, if the commission supported the staff position, who would feel that the judgment was not reasonable and not fair, and so the attorney would have to represent the commission in court. And I go into those
yeah,
four
sorry,
things.
I missed something on that. Thank you.
Now, let's maybe Fred could give me a better understanding of whether or not, since the word may, if you commission may, and not anybody has any right to compensation, would be able to appeal a commission decision that they didn't want to fund the second.
I'm not sure. Well, with the word may in there, and any court reviewing the matter later would have to find a very high burden of proof against the commission in order to find the commission had done wrong. And if they would have to find out the commission had abused discretion, not that they had committed an error merely, but that they had actually abused their discretion. So it, in most cases, it would pretty much be up to the commission. Is that unfair, Jim?
Yes.
I have some questions, Ms. Gass, but I don't think you missed the testimony. Yeah.
Well, in that regard, that would not prevent people from taking us to court. We find ourselves in court frequently, and it ends up that, you know, our judgments are sustained in court, but the that doesn't prevent us from being taken to court and to have to provide the manpower for those proceedings. Would it, Representative Brown?
Well, I'm sure that's true, but the implication to your answer is this will result in litigation. Every time you change the law, you can argue that it's going to result in litigation with those disaffected persons who are unhappy about the result. Lord Abbott said that when you adopt this rule, there would be no end to litigation about 200 years ago with regard to a minor matter involving the expense of the right to sue under the express contract. So if there are arguments against this bill, it's persuasive, then it's not one of them.
Well, I think in our comments we said that this, under four, this could result, not that it necessarily would result, but it could result. In attempting to get some kind of handle on this and thinking about some of the recent proceedings before us, for instance, we just had an interim rate proceeding involving Chugach Electric Association, and we could see in that a number of different groups. We had a very strong group from the Hillside area who was very concerned about the placement of a transmission line. We have the people in Hope who are served by Chugach Electric who have a different rate than those people who live in urban Anchorage. Actually, there are four rates that Chugach Electric has: urban, suburban, rural, and Hope. In addition, we have our experiences of the past year where electric utilities have chosen to end the rate for electric heat users, and we could see the possibility of these people who did not believe they were adequately represented through the public interest through the staff. So these are some of the groups that could come to us on the basis of our experiences over the past 6 months and be able to participate under this bill. As I said earlier in testimony, when before this legislation was drafted, we prefer committee substitute for House Bill 399 to this legislation. And I think there's an interesting philosophical approach. We prefer the... this bill leaves the control with the commission. The commission has the controls with this bill to say, yes, you're not being adequately represented by the public interest, this kind of thing. We feel that truly, if to bring the consumer perspective to the commission, that you are, the consumers would be better represented if this came, if the controls were outside the agency, as it would be with a special utility council. They would be making the decisions as to when.
Which case is intervened?
Yes, yes. In this legislation, the staff would, and an appeal to the commission or the commission would, and so I think that it's a philosophical consideration that should be addressed in looking at both of these pieces of legislation.
You prepared the fiscal note or directed its preparation?
Yes, I did.
You feel that this last year, at least most of your proceedings that were concluded, there was a fair result, a fair determination?
Yes, but I, it's probably not an objective answer because I participated.
At least as those you were in the majority, and because obviously there's a fairness standard that you're supposed to find,
yes.
Otherwise you would
yes.
find that. Well, then why have you found that this next year, after the effective date of this act, that you're going to have a lot of unfairness in all of your determination unless this bill passes?
I don't think that the fiscal note assumes unfairness.
Oh, yes, it does.
Well,
the standard set forth at page 1, lines 17 and 18, if your fiscal note is other than zero, clearly represents your opinion that this bill is necessary to the tune of $500,000 because it is necessary for these people to be present for a fair determination of the proceedings as a whole, and it's necessary in 1 year for $475,800. Otherwise, you would have had a zero fiscal note. Because of the findings that are necessary for you to allow anyone in the first place, includes with the conjunctive and a finding by you exercising your discretion that representation of the group is necessary for a fair determination of the proceeding taken as a whole. If you feel that under your current procedures you reach fair results and fair determinations of your proceedings taken as a whole, you would have presented a zero fiscal note. Apparently, you measure your prospective unfairness for the next fiscal year at the level of $475,800.
That is not the way we interpreted this, Representative Brown.
That's what the bill says.
Then we misread it. We read this. In our proceedings right now, we have an adversary position. We have the staff that represents the public interest We have the utility that represents the utility interest. It was our understanding from Mr. Barrier's testimony and then from reading number one and number two here that this was to bring a third perspective, and that of the consumer, and the consumer is not always the public interest, and that this was a vehicle for bringing the consumer interest to the commission. On the basis of the proceedings that we had in 76, I believe we did make fair determinations. I believe in two cases we had representation from consumer groups, and only those two. So if we have misinterpreted this, then I'll take it back and look at it. But I don't know how we could come in with a zero fiscal note.
Well,
because then there would be no vehicle for the interest of these people who are not adequately represented, and I'm sure that the electric heat people feel they have not been adequately represented. But
the test is not whether they feel it's true. The test is whether or not you and Coral, in your discretion, after considering these applications and making all of these findings, make all of these findings together and find that each one of these things is true all at the same time, and each one of them must be true, or you do not allow the person to intervene with the assistance provided by this bill. And one of those things is necessary to be found is that representation of this person or applicant is necessary for a fair determination of the proceeding taken as a whole. By coming in with a non-zero fiscal note, you have projected prospective unfairness in your proceeding for the next fiscal year to the tune of $475,800.
Mr. Chairman, I think that Mr. Brown stretched the point here a little bit. I think further that if we're going to take that approach to it, let's put a zero fiscal note on it and pass it out. If Mr. Brown is accurate here, then the thing should have a zero fiscal note. With a zero fiscal note, I put a do and do not pass on it. I'm going to do pass on it. Let's go. Otherwise, we just go on a circle here with this thing. It's obviously not going to be a zero fiscal note. It's obviously going to cost some money. The question is how much, and the question is, do you want to pay it? So, for a zero fiscal note, I will sign a due pass on it and get it out of here and wait and save time.
I agree that it's obviously going to be a cost.
I think it's going to be a cost, too. Maybe I'm being a little unfair here, just a little bit unfair, because the bill does say that. In my opinion, Mr. Chairman, the agency has come up with a very high fiscal note, maybe using techniques we estimated very well, but they've come up with a high fiscal note because they disliked the bill, and that particular proceeding bothers me. I think that probably there are going to be a few cases where it would be better, and perhaps they would make a finding like this, and I doubt if it would be to the tune of $500,000.
This language comes almost word for word out of regulations of the Federal Trade Commission, which has recently instituted a program of intervener financing, an opportunity to talk with an attorney for the FTC last summer. He indicated to me that the way it's handled simply a block appropriation annually to cover intervener financing. And that on a case-by-case basis, they have that amount of money available to them for the fiscal year. And once the money's gone, that's it.
Mr. Chairman, did he indicate how what the process he would go through to determine the allocation of those funds?
As he described their process to me, it had nothing to do with the staff, that it was a commission judgment, that it was handled through a regular petition intervening, and that it was reviewed by the commission itself. And they made the judgment on whether or not the money was going to be allocated, and that very rarely did it result in the financing of the entire intervener's effort, that it was usually financing for expert witnesses and that type
We have had a proceeding in front of us with a telephone utility where there is an intervener. And I believe Mr. Hanger's testimony before us is that he has spent at least $25,000 up until this point as an intervener in a proceeding. We have no background on this at all, and I am not familiar with the Federal Trade Commission and how they work. The thing is, the commission itself has no staff. You know, we have four secretaries, and we have no